Hello and welcome to this interview. I'm Megan Gibson, co-host of the Trauma Super Conference. Today I'm speaking with Margaret Paul, a best-selling author of 12 published books, relationship expert, and co-creator of the powerful inner bonding healing process. She successfully worked with hundreds of thousands and taught classes and seminars around the world for 50 years. She's also a member of the Transformational Leadership Council. Margaret Paul, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Looking forward to it.
So this is, I love this question and it's a big one, but why is learning to love yourself so important to healing trauma?
You know, it is so basic to everything, because if you are continuing to treat yourself, as so many people do, the way that you were treated as you were growing up, you are constantly re-traumatizing yourself. So for so many people, they were judged and then they end up continuing to judge themselves. Their feelings were ignored. They continue to ignore their feelings. They saw their parents and other people around them turning to addictions to numb out. They turned to addictions to numb out. They saw role modeling of people making others responsible for their feelings, blaming others, blaming externals. And then they do that. And so there's so much self-abandonment that we learned as we were growing up. And self-abandonment re-traumatizes ourselves, no matter what the trauma is, whether it's childhood trauma, which I deal with a lot and have for many, many years, or whether it's trauma as an adult. If you're continuing to treat yourself unlovingly, you are re-traumatizing yourself over and over again. And you know, there's many trauma therapies, which are very, very helpful, but they're not permanent if you're abandoning yourself. And so it is vital for healing trauma to learn to love yourself. But most people have no idea what that even means. So we can talk about that.
Yeah, I want to get into it. And also, as you were speaking, I was thinking about how I've had this corroborated by so many speakers that I interview, right? And that and it all makes sense. We know why we do it, because we can't separate ourselves from our caregivers, the people that are supposed to support us in the way that we do. Our very survival is dependent on having good, stable relationships with our caregivers, even if that means we have to sacrifice ourselves in the midst of doing that, right? Right. And then we get to adulthood, when we don't necessarily have to do that anymore, but we're in such a pattern of doing it that we've forgotten how to be our own greatest kind of ally, so to speak.
Well, we never learned. I mean, most of us never learned, because didn't have the role modeling. I mean, my parents were horrible role models for taking loving care of themselves. All I learned from them were all these ways of abandoning myself. And so when I realized, oh my God, I've got to learn to love myself, it's like, what does that mean? How do I do that? And so it's not even that we forgot, but we never learned it. It's really not in our culture. Like if you look at the media, it really doesn't tell you how to love yourself. It tells you, oh, get this new car and you'll feel better, or get these clothes, or get or eat this food, or take this pill, or whatever, and you'll feel better. That has nothing to do with loving yourself.
Yeah, right. It's a false currency of support, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah, so it feels good for like 5 minutes.
Yeah. So we're going to get into the how, but before we even approach that, I would love to ask you what the signs are that you've started to love yourself, like that what you're even trying is working.
Well, the first thing that you notice is you feel some relief. When you take loving action for yourself, your feelings let you know. Our feelings are a source of inner guidance, and our feelings instantly let us know whether we're loving ourselves or abandoning ourselves. Our feelings of peace and relief and feeling, you know, whole inside, feeling safe, feeling a sense of self-worth, let us know that we're loving ourselves. But our feelings of anxiety and depression and guilt and shame and anger and aloneness and emptiness and jealousy and envy, all of these feelings which we call in inner bonding the wounded feelings, let us know that we are in fact abandoning ourselves. And then there's another set of feelings, the existential feelings of life, like the loneliness and the grief and the heartbreak and the helplessness over other people's unloving actions. And even though those feelings are not caused by us, we still need to learn to lovingly manage them. And in fact, because most people have no idea what to do with those particular feelings, because when we were young, we didn't, you know, again, we didn't have any role modeling for how to deal with the deep existential pain of life. And so we learned all the addictive ways, the avoidant ways to avoid those feelings, because when we're little, we can't handle those feelings. And so it becomes very important today for people to recognize those feelings. And instead of saying, well, you're making me feel heartbroken, you did this to me, to learn, because nobody's gonna fix you. It's so important to learn to manage and release these feelings out of our body lovingly and compassionately. And that's a big part of what really helps trauma, is to learn to bring our compassion in for ourselves, which most people never think about doing.
Say more about that. What does that mean to you to bring in that compassion piece first?
You know, if you think about when you were growing up and you got hurt, what did you want? Like, if you had a loving parent, didn't you want that parent to just be there and hold you and understand and be compassionate for your feelings? Many of us didn't have that. I didn't. My mother was completely incapable. Both my parents were incapable of compassion, so I didn't see it. Although I think maybe most people are born with it and either they put a lid on it or they develop it. And I was a very compassionate child and I always tried to be there for my parents, but they had no idea how to be there for me. So for me, compassion is a gift of spirit. We don't generate compassion, just like we don't generate love or peace or joy. These are our gifts of spirit. This is what spirit is. Spirit is love and peace and compassion and joy and wisdom and guidance. And so when we're open to learning about loving ourselves, and this is vital for accessing the information we need, since we didn't learn it and it's not in the media, we have to be open to learning to access that. And so when my heart hurts, like when people are mean, or when I don't watch much TV, but if I happen to see somebody else's and I see people hurting each other, I'm just heartbroken. And so for me, compassion means that I open to spirit, open to guidance. And when we're open, it naturally comes into our heart. And so for me, compassion would be like saying to my feeling self, which you can call your inner child, honey, I know that just hurts your heart. You know, it's so hard when you see people hurting each other or people being mean to you. And I'm right here. I'm not going to leave you alone with this. And just to bring that love and compassion inside. And that's what allows the feelings to release and move through your body. Whereas if you ignore them, they get stuck, and that's re-traumatizing.
Absolutely. God, you said so many things that I want to come back to. I was like kind of silently trying to take notes. I'm just going to speak to it, because the thing that kept coming up to me visually as you were talking is, as if I'm someone watching and I'm imagining myself coming, going through this process, it can feel kind of in your body, the experience of learning that self-compassion can feel a lot like it might if you were trying to learn how to skateboard like into a pool or like skydive or something, right? Like you're going to, what you're learning and the support of people like you is all that protective equipment. We're going to get you trained the right way. We're going to put your helmet on or your knee pads on or whatnot. But then you might have, you know, people all along or in the plane or something screaming at you, telling you, why are you doing this? And this seems wrong. And like all the other people's judgments about the way that you're now treating yourself and the way that impacts your relationships with them. Yes. Right. And so if you could talk a little bit about how that self-compassion piece, managing the openness and maintaining that openness while you're receiving all of the discomfort from your relationships and the way that you move in the world that might come from other people.
Yeah. So I went through this when I learned that I needed to love myself, or actually I was going to die if I didn't love myself because I was so sick. And I learned from my guidance that it was because I was abandoning myself. And so I needed to learn to love myself and bring compassion. But I knew that the people, or I felt that the people who said they loved me only loved me for what I was giving to them. I was a caretaker. I was completely ignoring me, giving to them. And I was so afraid that if I loved me, they were going to leave and be mad and all that. And so I had to make a decision. I had to make a life-changing decision, a life-affirming decision, that number one, I was willing to be hurt. And number two, I was willing to lose them, but I was no longer willing to lose me. I wasn't willing to die to avoid what was going to happen. And everything that I was afraid of happened. My parents disowned me. My 30-year marriage ended. 2 of my 3 kids were mad at me. A lot of people were mad at me. But, and we do need support in this. I did have support from friends of mine who supported me. You know, that's how you know whether people love you. They support you in taking loving care of yourself and not taking responsibility for everybody else and caretaking everybody. And so I had to spend a lot of time just holding my inner child, holding my feeling self. And actually I got a doll and actually held her the way I wasn't held as a child and said, I'm here. I am an adult. Spirit is here and we can handle this. We will be okay. And I know it's hard, but this is life-saving for us. And we do need to know who truly loves us and who doesn't. And so I just stayed with that. I held the pain and I did not let it get stuck. This is what re-traumatizes. As you hold the pain with compassion, as you open, you have to open to learning with your higher guidance, which is always here, whether people recognize it or not, it's always here. And when you open to learning with your higher guidance, that guidance is there, that love, that compassion comes right into your heart. And so I would hold it until I could feel it begin to release. And then I would say, I give it to you, God, and I ask for peace and acceptance in return. And I could feel the peace and acceptance coming into my being. And I had to do that over and over. It's not a one-time thing. I had to do it over and over.
I was going to say, maybe sometimes multiple times a day, huh?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But it brought my health back. I mean, I became very, very healthy. It was shocking to me to realize how fast I became healthy once I started not giving myself up, not caretaking, not re-traumatizing myself all the time, treating myself the way my parents had, but treating myself with love and compassion. So not only did I get healthy, but my work soared. I became able to manifest the things that I wanted. I mean, there were so many good things that came out of that really, really hard time of my life.
And it's not to be understated how hard that is, right? I mean, especially when we take into account gender roles, a huge portion of our audience and attendees at these conferences are female. You know, caretaking roles are not always female, but many times the majority they are. And when you're choosing yourself and everybody in your life that needs you and needs you to stay in that caretaking, overgiving, abandoning yourself role, can't be understated how difficult that is, can it?
Well, it cannot be understated. It was really, really hard because I was the only child and my parents had done well later in life. They kept reassuring me that I didn't have to worry about retirement. And then unbeknownst to me, cut me out of their will. So yeah, it was hard. It was really hard, but I would do it again because my life is fantastic. I have a fabulous life. I have my dream life, what I always wanted. I would never have been able to manifest that if I had continued. In fact, I don't think I would be alive if I had been given, you know, if I had been caretaking like I had.
All right. So now let's get into it, because I just keep wanting to ask you deeper, more deeply probing questions, but let's talk specifically and explicitly about inner bonding. I know that there's 6 steps. So if you could kind of take me through and give everybody an idea.
Okay. So step one is the willingness to feel your pain and get inside your body. Like all of us, when we're growing up, we learn to be in our head, to not feel all this pain. So we have to get back in our body, because as I said, our feelings are a source of inner guidance. And if you're in your head and you're numbing out with addictions, you're not going to know what you feel. So you're not going to get the guidance. So it's a matter of learning to get present. It took me quite a while because I was in my head paying attention to everybody else's feelings. I didn't know anything about what I felt. So getting in your body and being present with your feelings and being willing to take responsibility for them. That is step one. Step two is you breathe into your heart. You open to learning about loving yourself. In inner bonding, there's only 2 intentions. One is you open to learning about loving yourself. The other is you protect against pain with various forms of controlling and self-abandoning behavior, whether you're trying to control somebody else with anger or blame or withdrawal or caretaking or whatever, it's self-abandoning. And so we open to learning, and whether or not you believe in anything spiritual, it's very helpful to imagine an older, wiser part of you, your higher self. And you just say, I invite your love and compassion and strength and wisdom into my heart. And that creates what we call the loving adult. We have to be a loving adult. We can't be operating like a scared child to heal. And so then that's step two. So then in step three, we go back. Let's say in step one, we tuned into feeling anxious, which of course a lot of people are today. And so we go back in, we breathe into the anxiety. And now we're asking, what am I doing? How am I treating you? What am I telling you? How might I be abandoning you? What am I not doing? These kinds of questions that's making you feel anxious. So let's say I've done that, and then I go back inside and I let the anxiety speak, not my head, but the anxiety. And the anxiety might say, well, you're always judging me. You're telling me I'm not good enough, and I got to be perfect, and I got to say everything right. And I made a fool out of myself. And you know, when I was with that person, oh, how could I have been such a jerk? And you don't pay any attention to me. You don't even know why I'm here. You know, you don't know that I exist. And so I feel all alone and anxious and scared inside. So many things that anxiety might be telling you. And once you understand how you're treating yourself, how you're abandoning yourself, you go a little deeper to what we call the wounded self. This is the ego, the wounded ego. And you ask, why? Why am I judging myself? Because that's where the false beliefs are. Why am I telling myself I got to be perfect? Why am I ignoring my feelings? And so that part might say, well, we have to ignore our feelings because we can't handle them. And anyway, the feelings don't mean anything. They're stupid. And I have to judge myself to get myself to do it right. And if I do it right, then everybody will love me and approve of me, and then I'll be okay. I mean, these are all big false beliefs that we're operating from. And if I do it right, I can control everybody. I can control how they feel about me. Major false belief. So we're becoming aware of why we're treating ourselves the way that we are. When we have that full picture, that's step three. We go to step four. And I ask people to imagine themselves in a really beautiful place in nature, with sitting like at a picnic table with their older, wiser self. And they're asking 2 questions. What is the truth about any of these false beliefs? Like, is it true that if I do everything right and I'm perfect, I can control how people feel about me? Well, your guidance is going to say, no, nobody controls how you feel about them. What makes you think you could control how they feel about you? I mean, there's going to be a lot of truth that comes in from your higher guidance if you're open. And then the other question is, what would be loving to me right now? What's the loving action right now? And this is something I encourage people, along with learning to stay present with your feelings, I encourage people to practice this throughout the day. I ask all day, what's loving to me right now? What's in my highest good right now? And again, whether or not you believe anything's there, you're going to start to get answers. They're going to pop into your mind about what would be loving to you right now. And it's about anything. It's about what you put in your body. It's about how you spend your time. It's about who you spend it with. It's about anything. And that guidance is there. And you don't have to believe it to ask the question, but if you ask it enough, you're going to start to get answers and you're going to start to know that you're not alone, that you're always being guided. So once you get that, then in step five, you take the action, whatever it might be, just to hold yourself. It might be to stop smoking or get some exercise or go to bed earlier or eat different or stand up with somebody or change jobs. It could be a million things, but you need to take the loving action. And when you do, you're going to know, like I said, it's loving when you feel a sense of relief. It's not always easy and it doesn't always feel good, but it will give you relief. And then, so step six is tuning into how it feels. If you feel that relief, you know you've taken a loving action. So that's very briefly the six steps. Anybody can learn them. It's not that they're hard, but it does take a lot of practice to actually bring them into your life so that they become natural to you.
Mm. Yeah, and I would say the steps themselves aren't hard, but maybe being with them, right? That's where the work comes in, is the really being in the step. I can totally feel that. Yeah.
Yeah. It takes courage. You know, it takes courage because we've been programmed to avoid our feelings. We've been programmed to think we can't manage them. We've been programmed to try and control things externally instead of what we can control, which is ourselves. And so it takes courage to move out of these programs and into really learning to love ourselves.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've had a practice since my mid-20s of writing letters back and forth to my 60-year-old self. And now that I'm closer to 60 than I was then, she might have to get older.
Right. No, I tell people, think about somebody like 500 years older.
And yeah, I think that's what I have to age her up to, yeah.
Right.
She needs to be wiser than I am now, even though I've gained a lot of wisdom since then. So yeah, I want to come back to that piece about the wounded ego, right? And the why and what you've learned about this process and inner bonding and how you can tell the difference between maybe your ego answering that question and your guidance answering that question?
Oh, that's a very good question. People ask that all the time. Yeah. So your wounded ego loves to mask as your guidance loves to mask.
That's right. Like, how do we know?
But you know, by how you feel, see, that's why it's so important, because when it comes from your guidance, it might not feel good, but it's going to feel right. But if it comes from your wounded ego, it just inside, it just doesn't feel right. It might feel good. Like if you say, well, is it in my highest good to stop smoking, for example? And your higher guy, your wounded ego says, oh, come on, so many people have smoked and they haven't died of lung cancer. And, you know, it won't hurt to do it a little longer. And that might feel good. It's not going to feel right. Whereas if you're with your higher guidance will say, you're using this addiction to avoid your feelings, and it's not loving to you. It's not healthy for you. Now, that may not feel good, but it's going to feel right. So your feelings will let you know. Now, our wounded ego, we all have this. And this exists in the lower part of the left brain where the fight or flight mechanism is. And this part of our brain absorbs false beliefs as we're growing up. And so this part of us can be any age. It can be pre-birth, like let's say your mother didn't want you. And so you absorbed a belief that I shouldn't even be on the planet, or I'm unlovable, or I'm not worthy. We can absorb these at any age. And so the wounded ego might be 2 or 5 or 10 or 20 at any given moment, depending upon when you absorbed a false belief, when you started an addictive process. Like if you started drinking at 13, when you're over drinking, your 13-year-old wounded ego is in charge. Or you started eating sugar when you were 7 to numb out the trauma that you might have had from physical or emotional sexual abuse. You might have learned to numb it out with sugar, so that when you're doing that, you might be operating as a 7-year-old wounded self. And so we all did this to one degree or another. It's part of our survival. And so we don't want to judge this part of us. And it's not a matter of getting rid of it, because we can't get rid of it, but we can heal it. And that's what inner bonding is about, because these false beliefs can get healed through loving ourselves, through acting on the truth rather than on the false beliefs. And what happened with me is, as I practiced inner bonding over the years and developed my loving adult self, and this is one of the exciting things about inner bonding, is that it develops new neural pathways in your higher brain. The more you do it, the more you develop the new neural pathways for the loving adult. And it becomes easier to be operating as a loving adult rather than as your ego wounded self. And what happened for me over time, see, that ego wounded self is about making you feel safe. That's what it's about. And we needed that as we were growing up. But over time, as my loving adult learned to truly make me feel safe, not with addictions, but with taking loving care of myself, speaking up for myself, setting limits, all kinds of things, my wounded ego eventually kind of went, oh, okay, you're doing a better job than I am, and let go a lot. I don't hear from that part of me very often. And so it's not that it goes away, but that it gets healed and it relaxes, because that loving adult is making you feel a lot safer than the wounded ego ever could.
Mm, I love all of that. And I love just the acknowledgement that the wounded ego is operating from history to keep us safe, right? It's not a hysterical part. It's like a somebody who never received any training, but got a lot of expertise because of experience, and has misinterpreted all of that experience as to what the actions need to be that are taken that are protective, right?
Right. And they did protect us. I mean, we're alive. We didn't die. We didn't go crazy. So it worked to a certain degree, but it's not working now.
Yeah. And just the way that you described your wounded ego letting go and saying like, oh, I see, with consistency, that you got this. I feel safer now. That's just such a beautiful expression. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. That, you know, so many people, they're afraid to really shift, because the wounded ego has been taught something called ego death. Mm. And that's very scary to the wounded ego. Oh my God, I can't die. You know, we'll die if I die. We won't be safe. That's a false belief, because it can't actually die. It's a part of us. It's in the lower brain. It can't die, but it can heal, like I said. And so one of the things that's very helpful for the ego in terms of letting go is to give it a new job. And one of the jobs that I've given my wounded ego, which has worked very well for me, is that I've given it the job of affirmations. Because affirmations are a form of control. Whether they work or not, I don't know. But my wounded ego loves that she feels she's in control. She affirms this and affirms that and gives her, you know, and so it's positive rather than negative. And then she knows she's not going to die. She has a job. I've given her a job. But it's not negative. It's not coming from false beliefs. So that's been very helpful.
Oh, that's such a fantastic reframing, right? Because so much of our protective, unconstructive ego can say really terrible things to us that we've internalized from those caretakers that didn't know what they were doing and had their own wounds. And we've just inherited and learned their wounds. And so instead of saying, be quiet, just saying like, okay, I hear that you like to get loud. Let's give you some new senses and some new ways to get loud that are going to be more affirming for me.
That's exactly right. And so then you're not re-traumatizing yourself. See, you're bringing love in sort of a backdoor way so that everybody's on board helping to support you in your highest good.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just a small personal anecdote. When I first started doing this particular job and interviewing people for conferences about 2 years ago, when I would read people's intros, I noticed I had this terrible internal voice that was just picking on me and criticizing me and noticing all the ways that I would mispronounce or stumble or sounded nervous or just all of these criticisms. And so it took a while. It took probably, I would say, about 6 months in repetition for me to be able to talk while all this was happening and also just reassure that part of my ego, like, I hear you. I see what you're trying to do. You're trying to protect me. You're trying to make sure everything is going well. You're trying to make sure I'm perfect so that everyone likes me, right? Like, thank you. I got this, right?
Right. Yeah, but it had the opposite effect. It made you nervous.
Well, at first, yeah.
But I mean, when your wounded ego was criticizing you, it had the opposite effect.
Yes, see, exactly. It didn't give me any performance excellence. It made everything worse. Yeah. So just having gratitude for that part of myself allowed that part of myself to calm down, to take a back seat, to be like, okay, all right. And nothing about the way that I say anything has changed. Just my attitude toward myself.
That's right. But of course, then you're more relaxed. It's more fun. And you probably make less mistakes because, you know, when we're judging ourselves, we get stressed and we make more mistakes.
Of course. Or just allow myself to make mistakes. I mean, that's the human condition, right? Like, I've had some of my best laughs with people that I'm interviewing when I make a mistake and admit it and we both can giggle about it. Like, it's just the human condition. We all make mistakes, right?
Yeah. And that's really, really important what you're saying in terms of loving yourself. At some point I said to my inner child, you can make all the mistakes in the world. You can fail. You can fall on your face. You make a fool of yourself and I'm still going to love you. And boy, did that create so much freedom when you don't think, oh my God, if I make a mistake, then I'm not worth anything, or I'm a terrible person, or whatever the wounded ego thinks. And so giving myself the freedom to be human was very, very freeing.
Yeah. And especially I'm thinking about the concept or the container of motherhood and, you know, when your roles are being questioned, like if I'm not a partner, if my parent or if my children don't understand my choices, my self partnering in the way that I'm this process, because they can't, they're children. And then my relationship as a mother, my value, my worthiness as a mother is being questioned because of this, right? Like, you've got to be steadfast in this process in order to withstand that storm.
Yeah, that's right. Well, my kids are in their 50s now. And so they're all middle age. And when I was having kids, most people did not do what I did. Most people were not nursing their babies. Most people did not hold them all the time the way that I did. And so I got a ton of criticism, but I'm so glad that I didn't listen, because that's what kids need.
We all know that now. We didn't know it then, did we? You knew.
Yeah.
So you've talked so much about kind of spiritual connection and that aspect of this process. And I know you've got two secrets to share with us about at-will spiritual connection that you've discovered.
Right. Yeah. So this took me a while to understand, because it was something I really, really wanted, is to be able to have that access anytime I wanted it. It would come in once in a while, like it does for most people, but I wanted it when I wanted it. And so I finally put it together. So in my early 20s, I had been a sickly kid. In my early 20s, I was tired of being sick. And I started to read books like The Poisons in Your Foods and Silent Spring. And I realized that a lot of why I was sick was the food. And so I went on all organic. There was one little health food store in LA at the time. And I went on all organic and threw everything out that wasn't, you know, and I went on all natural, made my own food and all that. And I got a lot better. Well, so then later in my life, like in my mid-40s is when I got sick again, and I had no idea why I was sick after eating so well. That's when inner bonding came in. Fortunately, that's when I met Dr. Erica Chopic. She's the co-creator. She had half of inner bonding. I had half of inner bonding. We put it together. And I realized then about, I learned a lot from her about spiritual connection and about the fact that in order to connect, we have to be open to learning about loving ourselves. That is the major key. We have to be open to learning about loving ourselves. So I started doing that. I started practicing being open to learning about loving myself. And I had been trying everything. I had taken courses and listened to videos and how to access this. But when I opened to learning very deliberately about loving myself, that connection was there, and it was there very quickly. So I got really excited and I said, okay, I just have to teach my clients to open to learning about loving themselves and they'll access their guidance. Except it didn't happen for them the way it did for me. And it took me a while to figure out that it was also because of how I was eating, that there's a frequency of your mind that needs to be raised to access spirit, which is opening to learning about loving yourself. And there's a frequency of the body that needs to be high enough, because spirit is at a higher frequency than we operate at. And so if you're eating junk food, processed food, fast food, sugar, all that stuff, you know, factory farm oils, high fructose corn syrup, all this crap that's in food, your body may be at too low a frequency, even if you're open to learning, which was happening with my clients. They were opening to learning about loving themselves, but they were eating junk. And so I finally put it together that the reason I was having such an easy time, it's because not only was I open to learning, but I was eating immaculately. I eat immaculately. I don't eat junk. I make all my own food and everything's organic. And that made it very easy for me. And since then, it's been, I mean, that was almost 40 years ago. Since then, it's been very easy for me to access my guidance at will. So when I work with people, I mean, it's not so easy for people in this day and age with the food that's available and everybody's busy, but I'm busy and I make all my own food. I do not buy the junk that most people do. And for me, it's not hard because being able to access that is everything. That has changed my world. It is everything to me, and I will not do anything. I will not put anything in my body that's going to lower my frequency.
And I'll just say, you know, that I know that people's access and ability to eat well and have access to good food varies. It just does, yeah. Right? Based on where they live, their amount of income, things like that.
But I work with people all over the world, and really there are ways. People can learn to grow a lot of their own food. Yeah. People can learn, like here, people can go to Costco, where it's a lot less expensive. It's more available than people think.
Yes.
And yeah. Really, people spend so much on junk, they don't realize how much they're spending. And on being sick and on medication and all of that. And so I have found if people are really serious, they can find a way to do it.
Yeah, they'll find a way. And it's even if it were, you know, one meal a day, we start small, right? Let's make one meal a day. Because you'd be surprised how many people eat out for every meal because they feel like they're busy and that's what they have access to. And we're, it's, you know, it's hard, but it can be done.
Yes. And in the neighborhoods where, you know, they don't even have supermarkets where all they have. Yeah. Fortunately, a lot of them are learning to create their own food, to, you know, plant their gardens and have some chickens and have community gardens and, you know, be able to have cows there and get milk and things like that. So, and that's what needs to happen is that, you know, they need to take it back into their own hands.
Absolutely. Well, Margaret Paul, this has been fantastic. How can people find out more about you and Inner Bonding?
So they can go to innerbonding.com. And we have a free 7-day course where they can get the overview of inner bonding. And there's an awful lot on the site. There's many articles, many ways of learning inner bonding, many books and courses. So if people really want to learn to love themselves, it's available for them at innerbonding.com.
Fantastic. Thanks again so much for being with us.
You're so welcome. Thank you.